Jason O'Malley is a senior partner solutions architect at Amazon Web Services. After college, Jason worked for Al Gore's startup user-generated television channel Current TV, and then for the Conan O'Brien Show and Conan's Emmy Award-winning Team Coco Digital Group. He's very active in the area of emerging and sustainability in media. He's presented on sustainability in media and entertainment and the cloud and published an SMPTE white paper to tell us absolutely everything there is to know about media over IP in the cloud. Jason O'Malley.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for having me here today. Get our slides going. So, as I said, I'm a senior partner solutions architect at Amazon Web Services, and so I'm based out of Chicago. And so I spent 13 years working in production and actually have all kinds of post-production, production, live events, digital distribution, and then shifted into cloud computing. And now I'm based in Chicago and I'm just really excited to be here today to talk about media over IP and the cloud. So we're gonna cover a lot of topics today. What we're first going to start with is we're going to talk about broadcast trends that our teams at AWS are seeing and hearing from our customers. Then we're going to talk about how to look at a traditional broadcast flows and how those can apply to the cloud. Then we'll look at something we called our AWS well-architected framework, which helps you understand the pros and cons of your decisions that you make while architecting for media workflows on the cloud. And then we'll take a look at implementing cloud best practices like resiliency and sustainability in broadcast. And then we'll move into ways to get started to adopting the cloud. And if you have any questions, I'll be hanging around after the session and later today. So starting at the top here, we're gonna talk about some of those trends that we're hearing when we talk to our AWS customers in media and broadcast and our partners in media and broadcast. And so we have many customers that are right now, they're reviewing their legacy workflows and they're looking to better understand how they can benefit from the cloud and maximize some of the benefits and value from their archives, and also the desire to see the same increased efficiencies and, as we'll talk about later, even to reduce their emissions. So first, one of our first drivers is cost optimization. So obviously there's changes in the business model within our industry that are driving more of an interest towards a pay-as-you-go model. And so the benefit of this is that there's a low or no capital expenditure implications when you're launching new services. So it also helps with the elimination of undifferentiated efforts. So when you're working with the cloud, there's less focus on racking, stacking, patching of the operating system, and you also have reduced consideration about your power generators, your HVAC, your building, and even security. It also allows you to align your cost models to your revenues. So you can more easily design, say, gold-plated services with high revenue implications, and then perhaps you have a bronze type, maybe you call it like a bronze tier of service that you design, maybe it has a lower availability or has lower cost solutions or services that are powering it. So in other words, you may be able to choose a software or maybe an availability service level agreement that's better set to fit the revenue expectations that of the workflow that you're working on. And so the flexibility of tailoring that is gonna be easier with the flexibility of the cloud. And then another thing we like to say is just with all of that savings, you're able to reinvest more of that time and that cost that would have gone elsewhere into innovation for your customers. So the next one is scalability and agility. So ability to scale up resources up and down is a big one. So you can think of this as when you can turn production control rooms on and off, you can destroy them when you don't need them. And also if you have something like a pop-up channel for a marketing event, this makes it easier to set up marketing campaigns on a one-off basis that aren't up and running all the time. And you can also quickly deliver services to new platforms as they launch, and you can stay up to date with consumers' ever-changing media viewing habits. Third one is experimentation and innovation. So it's much easier to experiment on the cloud compared to your fixed data center. So It reduces the need to, say, get loaner equipment shipped to you from vendors. You don't need to rack and stack or configure that equipment, which can take weeks. And it helps because the experimentation can start to be in the clicks of a few mouses and buttons rather than fully lifting and installing the hardware. There's also the benefit that if you fail with the experiment, it's easier to roll back and roll on to the next experiment. So that speed of experimentation leads to a faster path of innovation and delivering for your customers. So the last one is sustainable workflow. So when you talk with broadcast engineers, you'll often hear that they rarely turn off equipment that's in their data center. And so the cloud makes the process of utilizing resources that are what you need and then releasing them when you're not needing them a lot easier to flexibly scale up and down. And so that ultimately has an impact on the overall energy consumption, which translates to the carbon footprint of the workload. And even at AWS, we have a customer carbon footprint tool that helps you measure what is that carbon footprint impact of the workload as it's becoming more of a trend within the industry. So let's take a look at a familiar broadcast workflow, and we'll start to lay the groundwork and then talk about how does that map to the cloud. So before diving into the cloud, we've laid out this high-level view of an end-to-end broadcast workflow. So obviously, starting on the left-hand side, we have our familiar sources, whether they're in studio, at the venue, out in the field. They can also be social media sources, archival sources. And then if you move over, you have your transport, your ingest to actually contribute and send the media where it needs to go. And then depending on what kind of broadcast production you have, you may have a production control room, a master control room. In the news setting, you might have a newsroom computer system. And then, of course, there's other elements. You're going to have potentially production or media asset management systems and archive systems, as well as live production workflows with vision and audio mixers. And then towards the end of the flow, you have your content delivery in the form of content delivery networks, or CDNs. You have potentially over-the-top OTT, social media delivery, linear, and more. And so then ideally, there's a layer of observability that goes across all of this. And the intent of that is to keep an overall health of the workload and to be able to spot issues that are emerging that may impact the operators or maybe even the viewers of the event. So that's to lay the groundwork. And before we start to map it, I'll start to lay out where our AWS services map in. So at AWS, we have a fleet of purpose-built services for media and video, and these help you reliably contribute, process, deliver, and monetize live and on-demand media. And that's over the internet to bring paralleled experiences to video screens everywhere. And so it goes over from internet or for broadcast. And we have this broken down across live streaming, VOD, broadcast, contribution, encoding, transportation, packaging, origination, and CDN. And then when we move forward and we map in our media services, so our media services are powered by technology from AWS Elemental. And so the name Elemental is probably familiar to many here and has been used in the industry for over 16 years for some of the highest profile events. And so now at Elemental, we have dedicated teams of video engineers that innovate constantly to improve video quality and so that you can focus on your business. And other great elements of the Elemental services that we've built that are cloud native is they scale as needed to mean consistent high quality content delivery. They have resiliency built in, and that includes automated monitoring. And they also allow you to continuously reduce distribution costs to deliver that high quality video to viewers with constant codec enhancements. You can also optimize your monetization opportunities with personalized advertisements, assembled linear channels, and the AWS media services are designed so they interoperate with other AWS services and also partner solutions. So now that we pull back the curtain on how this looks when we start to map in our traditional workflow and the cloud and AWS. So let's take a look at what we added. And I won't dive in too deep here. You can always ask me questions at the end if you'd like to double click any deeper. But hopefully you'll start to see an example of how we start to map it in. This is how you can map those existing workflows to the cloud. So with the left-hand side, obviously that's going to stay largely the same. It's your same your sources on the ground. And where we start to map things in is when we talk about actually bringing the signals into the cloud. And you can go about this a number of different ways. So you can transport the video over wireline or cellular internet connection. And that could be either over the public internet, it can be over VPN. Now, one thing that our professional broadcasters move more and more to is that we also have a service called AWS Direct Connect. So AWS Direct Connect is a networking service that's going to provide you an alternative path to getting to the cloud that doesn't traverse the public internet. And a Direct Connect connection is available at up to 400 gigabits per second. We also have interesting items like our AWS Wavelength Zone. So a Wavelength Zone is an AWS infrastructure deployment that's actually housed in the data center of a telecommunications provider. So here in the US, that's going to be Verizon. And so we have our compute and storage actually embedded in their network. And so traffic that's arriving over that 5G network doesn't have to leave. It can stay on the carrier's network and go right to the compute and storage at the edge to give you the lowest latency experience possible. So next we're going to look at some of the video services that actually help get your video feed and your files that are contributing and flowing into your AWS virtual private cloud environment. So at the top here you're going to see is AWS Elemental Media Connect. So Media Connect is very relevant for broadcasts. This is a reliable, secure, and flexible transport service for live video, and you can deploy it within minutes. And so using Media Connect, you can build live video processing workflows and securely share content with partners, affiliates, and that's with either within the cloud or actually returning it back on premises as well. And so Media Connect is going to take your high quality video, it takes it from one source, and it sends it to one or more destinations and even adds a layer of quality of service over that standard IP. So you're able to help do uninterrupted live video connections using packet recovery and also supporting standard industry video encryption. Now for the on-demand video files, we have multiple options. You have classic items like FTP, so we have a managed FTP service we call AWS Transfer Family. We also have synchronization services like AWS DataSync that can move files to the cloud. And we have a host of partner solutions as well. And then for storage, we have multiple storage options in the cloud, but the one you're going to see most frequently, that's maybe the most cloud native, is our Amazon Simple Storage Service, or S3. And so Amazon S3 is based on the unique architecture that provides a data durability designed for 11 nines of durability, which is obviously critical for our media archives. And then start to move forward here, and we'll start to look at, so when we look at our production and master control rooms, our newsroom computer systems, live production systems, production and media asset managers, those will typically run on our Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud instances. So as you see here, these will typically have a familiar industry partner that makes the software, and then that has been adapted so that it can run on those machines. Maybe the machines run Linux, maybe they run Windows. And so what it provides is that ultimately a familiar experience when you start to see all this coming together. Then finally, we get to our content delivery phase. So the content delivery, we have a variety of options. So one that's relevant for broadcast is our AWS Elemental Media Live. So this is a cloud-based live video encoding service, and it helps you to deliver fast, reliable, and easy-to-use, high-quality live video encoding. We also have Media Package, which is our just-in-time packaging service, as well as our Amazon CloudFront, which is our CDN, and it has 600 globally dispersed points of presence. And so here again, you can see Media Connect is here both at the beginning and the end, and this can contribute back for terrestrial and other needs, transporting the media back to your on-premises if you need to distribute it outside of the cloud. And of course, all of this, we talked about observability. So we also like to leverage our AWS observability services like CloudTrail, CloudWatch, and we can use those to help build health dashboards to take an end-to-end look of the system and to be able to see where the health is based on the native integration with the APIs for the services. This is also an interesting area. We have some demos coming at IBC this week where you can take a look at, from like a quality of service standpoint, you can utilize generative AI to help with the queries that can help query the variety of data sources to start to be able to tell, hey, where are my issues? Where are my viewers experiencing issues that are preventing a more positive viewing experience? So now you've seen some examples of how we can look at it from an end-to-end perspective. I'm going to do an example of a closer look at one of the workflows, which is something we call live cloud production. So setting the stage for live cloud production, if we talk about over our overall high-level view of a traditional workflow for live sports production, obviously you have your stadium, you have your venue, your microphones, and everything that's on premises. And then those feeds route to your vision mixer, your audio mixer, you have graphics and replay machines, and the legacy way would be to have this stored and operated within an outside broadcast OB truck that would be brought to site. Now with live cloud production, you're still gonna have the same functional elements. So you still have your video encoders, you have your cameras, but then where things start to change is that you have, say, your video router virtualized. You have your video, your audio mixers, your graphics and replay machine. Those can be virtualized to run on a virtual machine that's remotely controlled by the operator using, if you're familiar with virtual desktop, it'd be like that, but it's just run in an AWS data center. So what this opens up is, for some of our customers, this opens up the ability to have a centralized facility where you can have the production team remotely operating, maybe in parallel, maybe they have multiple rooms, but they're centralized, so it helps to avoid the need to travel. And in other cases, as we saw, especially during some of the worst times of COVID, it also opens up the ability for people to actually do their roles, technical directing, graphics operating from home. So what does that start to open up? Well, it starts to be pretty transformative, obviously. If you've seen, here are some examples of our cloud-based multi-location remote operations in actual production. And we've definitely seen, as we saw some of this pop up during the early times of COVID, but this has matured to the point where within the last year, this produced a live to broadcast NHL game. And in other leagues, like our European league I worked with, actually, it's called the European League of Football, and they've shifted to this model for 70% of their games to help reduce their cost and complexities for travel, and where they centralize their production team out of a facility in Munich. And that helps them to avoid having to travel across Europe. And so where this gets really powerful is that with remote production, you may have seen other remote production models, but where this gets compelling is that you get to utilize the existing on-demand compute and storage and networking that has been built out by the AWS cloud already, and you can use it on an on-demand basis. And so that helps to simplify the overall complexity of making this happen, and also helps to shrink the timelines of bringing it all together. So now, in order to take advantage of these exciting shifts, there are changes that need to happen within an organization. So we broke out a few of the user personas that we've seen, we've worked with, and that what are some of the changes, what are some of the concerns that they have in shifting to a model like this. So on the operator side, some of the key items that are going to be important are going to be, what is the familiarity of that UI or the user experience? They're also going to be concerned about, what is the operational workflow? Does it resemble what they're familiar and comfortable with? And also just simple things like, what is the button response latency? That's going to be very important to be able to have that same confidence that you have that same experience, you're producing the same output that you would in a traditional environment. Now on the engineering side, what we typically see is we see success hinge around the ease of configuration, the ability to reuse the existing skills, map those skills to the cloud, and then also to adopt items that come from other domains, domains established within cloud computing before, which is things like a DevOps mentality or infrastructure as code, CI/CD, where you're pushing constant changes and updates as code rather than physically building things out. And so this helps you build more robust systems and also push updates out more regularly and test them. And then finally on the business side, so there's the culture of shifting. One of the changes is shifting from the upfront investment of a CapEx model and then shifting it more to an OpEx model. That's a shift that we see our business counterparts at our customers and our partners changing. We see them lining up where they have their existing software license cycles and licensing model and aligning that up with cloud-friendly licenses. And then also we see more and more pressure within the corporate environments to be thinking about and concerned about what's a long-term sustainability plan that are trickling down. So how can we address some of these personas in a way? Well, one of the ways that we're going to address this is with our AWS partner ecosystem, and that's where that comes in. So now let's look back at our map that we looked at earlier of our workflow. And so now I have mapped in, and it's a list of example partners. This is not comprehensive. It just meant to be more as an example of where you can start to see where we have AWS partners mapped into certain workflows and systems. And so if you look here, you'll see that there's familiar names in the logical areas. And one of the great benefits of the existing customers is that because there's so many familiar names, that you can continue your existing relationship that you may have with either with the familiarity of your staff and your user base or the business relationships that you have for the licenses. And with this, we have an entire catalog of partner solutions that is searchable on our website. Some of them can even be procured directly within our AWS marketplace. And so these industry partners, they work with a partner solutions architect like myself to take their solutions, migrate it so that it's either cloud friendly in a hybrid way or a cloud native to run in that way. And so and then one of the items that I'll do and other partner solutions architects like myself is then we'll go through and we'll take a look at their solutions and we'll run it through a set of best practices and make sure that these established best practices that we've come up with, that those are applied to the solutions to know that it's going to be successful in the cloud. And so we'll talk a little bit more about some of those best practices next here. So this is where we get into what we call our AWS well-architected framework. And so this is a deeper dive into those cloud-based best practices, workflows that have been gained from the years of experience. So the way the AWS well-architected framework works is it helps you understand the pros and cons of your architectural decisions when you're building on AWS. So using this framework, you're able to, it helps you with best practices for designing, operating, and building secure, reliable, efficient, and cost-effective workloads in the cloud. And it provides you a way to consistently measure your architectures against best practices and to identify those areas of improvement on your roadmap. And so the process of reviewing an architecture is a constructive conversation. When people hear this at first, a lot of times they think it's going to be some scary deep dive automated review, but it's really actually a conversation. You go through, you input questions, and then as you input questions, you get a list of recommendations on how to fix those. You don't have to fix them immediately, but it's one of those items you can start to put on your roadmap, and you can start to learn from the collective knowledge of other customers that have built on AWS over the many years. So now that we've talked about the well-architected framework, some of the benefits that we see customers get from this is you can build and deploy faster. And so that helps you by reducing firefighting and your capacity management and leveraging more automation so that you can experiment more and release value more often. It helps you lower or mitigate risks so you can understand where you have risks in your architecture and you can address them before they impact your business. And then you can learn AWS best practices along the way. So this is an ongoing continuous journey. No one ever gets it perfect, and it's about just striving for better as time goes on. And so it helps make your teams and cultures more aware of how to build and architect on AWS. So we won't go too super deep today, but I do have a QR code there. We have a free, easily accessible white paper that goes over multiple pillars, and we'll start to go into just overviewing what those pillars are. And there's also a tool in our console called the Well-Architected Tool, and it helps you walk through these best practices. So before I do that, I'm going to spend a few moments here just talking about a few concepts. If you haven't built on AWS before, just so you have a concept of some of these terminologies. So one of the largest constructs we have is called an AWS region. So a region is a physical location around the world where we have multiple availability zones. And each availability zone has multiple physically separated data centers. And so each region also has two independent, fully redundant transit centers to cross the AWS network. And that enables regions to connect to the global network. And so here in the US, we have four primary regions, and those are in Northern Virginia, Ohio, Northern California, and Oregon. Now, I mentioned availability zones on the previous slide. So availability zones, these are one or more discrete data centers with redundant power, networking, connectivity, and they're housed in separate facilities. And so they also exist on isolated fault planes, flood planes, networks, and electrical grids to substantially reduce the chance of simultaneous failure. And it provides the resiliency of performing real-time data replication and the reliability of physical locations. I'll skip through these quickly, but you can just start to see, this is a map where you start to see our global regions and our availability zones around the world. These are local zones. Local zones is one more thing. I won't deep dive into those, but they're an extension from a region into metropolitan cities. So like we have a region where I'm based, or sorry, we have a local zone where I'm in Chicago. That's part of a larger region, and that helps to provide low latency access to compute and storage closer to the edge, which is obviously a key factor within media. I mentioned Direct Connect with the private connection to AWS. Here's a map showing all of our connections with Direct Connect around the world. And then zooming out, this is the world view of the architecture and how it's all connected together. And so it, you know, hopefully you can start to think, you have access to this, a few clicks of a button, what could you start building for your company, your customers? So now that we have covered those terms, let's jump back to the well-architected framework, and I'll just give you an overview, a preview of those six pillars that we look at when we're designing robust and architectures on the cloud. And so it's broken down across six pillars, which is operational excellence, security, reliability, performance efficiency, cost optimization, and sustainability. So operational excellence, this is going to be the ability to support development and run workloads effectively, to gain insight into their operations, and to continuously improve supporting processes and procedures to deliver business value. Security pillar is described, is designed to take advantage of cloud technologies to protect your systems and assets in a way that you can improve your security posture. Reliability, so the reliability pillar, this is going to encompass the ability of a workload to perform in its intended functionality correctly and consistently when it's expected to. So this includes the ability to operate and test the workload through its total lifecycle. Obviously, this is going to be the one we're going to look at here from a media perspective and from a high availability standpoint. From performance efficiency, this is the ability to use compute resources efficiently to meet system requirements and to maintain that efficiency as demand changes and technologies evolve. Cost optimization, the ability to run systems to deliver business value at the lowest possible price point. And then sustainability. So sustainability is the ability to continually improve sustainability impacts by reducing energy consumption and increasing the efficiency and to maximize the resource utilization of all of your deployed resources. Cost optimization and sustainability often go hand in hand, where if you're using it more efficiently, you're not wasting resources, your bill's going to be lower, and your impact is going to be lower. So let's take a look now at putting some of these practices into place in the context of a media workload, especially with the reliability pillar in mind. So here's a great example of a highly available live video encoding workload. So you see here, what you have is you have your Elemental live on-premises video encoders. Those have parallel redundant video signals that are going into AWS, but you see that they're heading into two separate availability zones to help reduce the chance of impact. And you see those collapse within Elemental Media Live. Elemental Media Live is our live video encoding service. That's highly available by default. So if the primary stream is impacted, it can fail over to the secondary stream. Then you see we have Media Package, which is our packaging and origination service. That's also highly available across multiple availability zones. And then we have our globally redundant Amazon CloudFront CDN and playback. So we'll dive into one more with like sort of a stepping through and about how that reliability and how that resiliency works when you put these best practices into place. So in this example, we have We have, again, parallel paths. It's going over Direct Connect. In this case, they actually have it visualized as going to two separate regions. So that's two geographically distinct places in the globe. And maybe for the highest profile workloads, they demand that. And so you see here, if we go back, source failover, if you have the two parallel sources, those can automatically fail over within Media Connect and switch to the backup if one is interrupted. And then also within Media Live and Media Package, we have server-side failover. So within the service, we can automatically flip over to the other signal if the signal's impacted or if the availability zone and data center that they're operating in is impacted, it can fail over to the other data center automatically with a seamless impact for the viewers. Here's one more complex. This is more on like a broadcast playout architecture. And so you see here you have your on-premises elemental encoders sending through Direct Connect, and they even have, you see the playout, so that would run, say, a playout on a partner solution that runs on our virtual machines, and then you have return JPEG XS feeds back to on-premises, and then you see as it goes through the flow that there's multiple redundancy, and it's also servicing multiple purposes. So on the top, you have an OTT-based delivery. On the middle, you're returning it back for an on-premises HEVC decode and transmission there. And so you can start to see how there's multiple paths, multiple redundancy, so that if there's a component or system failure somewhere along the way, it's able to fail over and fall over to a backup in multiple different ways. And that really helps to illustrate putting those resilient architectures and reliability best practices into play. So I'll go through this one quickly. This is an area that I spend a lot of time in, and it's an emerging within the industry. So when we talk about sustainability at AWS, we divide it into three categories. So we divide it into sustainability of the cloud, in the cloud, and through the cloud. And so sustainability of the cloud, this is going to refer to the overall sustainability efforts in our data centers. And this comes from AWS's scale allows us to achieve a higher resource utilization and efficiency that's going to be possible with a typical on-premises data center. And so what we've done is we've worked with an analyst firm called 451 Research, and they found that across multiple geographic regions that moving an on-premises workload to AWS can lower a workload carbon footprint by 80%, and that AWS infrastructure is 3.6 times more energy efficient than the median surveyed US enterprise data center. It also reflects that Amazon is the largest corporate purchaser of renewable energy globally. And so Amazon achieved its goal to match 100% of their electricity consumption with renewable energy in 2023. And so this comes into play when you run your workloads on AWS, that 22 of our AWS regions were matched with 100% renewable energy procured in market, including all of the regions in US and Canada. So let me move to sustainability in the cloud. This is when we start to look at those best practices to utilize your resources efficiently, both from a cost standpoint and also an efficiency standpoint. So if you provision it, you provision an on-demand resource, you use it when you need it, you shut it down when you don't. That's essentially what you're thinking about. If you just have something sitting, idling, then you're wasting cost and you're also wasting energy. And the last one is sustainability through the cloud, and this is where we'll take a look in a slide or two about how this applies to broadcast and helping to reduce travel and transportation. So if we look back at our live cloud production architecture, where we have our video mixers, all of this equipment virtualized running on software on the cloud. So following the best practices of cost optimization of sustainability, when you have a game on the weekend, instead of having the systems up and running the entire week, you can schedule them to run on the weekends, shut them down during the week, helps you to reduce your impact, your cost, by releasing those when you don't need them. But where also it comes into play is that travel and transportation is the largest part of a production's carbon footprint. And this was from a report from Albert, which is a group out of BAFTA in the UK. And so when they look at the film and TV industry and the environmental impact, they found that travel and transportation is consistently the largest source of emissions. And within sports production in particular, it's 67% of the average carbon footprint is related from travel and transportation, if you think of flying people in, bringing the OB truck to site. And so if we just look and compare, this applies both from a visualizing the workflow, but then also you can start to see from a travel and transportation perspective. If we compare from a micro view, so if you have legacy production, you have your stadium, your OB truck, your on-site production crew traveling the site. What starts to change with live cloud production is you still have, obviously, your stadium, your cameras, but what starts to change is perhaps your transportation van moving gear to site, maybe that can shrink because maybe you have a fly pack now instead of a full fleet of video mixers, audio mixers. Because that's virtualized, your footprint's going to be lower from just a weight standpoint, not to mention just a lower carbon intensity standpoint from transportation. Obviously, you're still going to have on-site crew. You still need people to run the cameras. You still need people to set up the video encoders. But because more of this infrastructure is going to be running in AWS or in the cloud, then you start to benefit where there's an entire group of people that their requirement to travel no longer happens at all. And so this can have benefits from a cost standpoint because there's less airline flights, less hotels being booked. It can have a quality of life benefit from the operators because now they're not perhaps being away every weekend. And then it also has benefits from a carbon intensity because air travel is one of the highest carbon intensive modes of travel. So this is my last slide on this front. So the way this works, if you want to think about the impact you can have by shifting this kind of mindset and workflow. So if you had your number of people, you multiply that by your carbon intensity factor of your mode of travel, multiply that by how many games you're going to repeat this workflow for, and you come up with what have you avoided by doing this. And you can do the same thing for cost in terms of estimating this out. So if we put in example numbers here, say you had 5 people, technical director, audio mixer, you name it, they're no longer traveling. You look up what the carbon intensity of that flight would have been, multiply it by how many times that particular situation was going to be repeated, and you come up with a number. That's your impact. This is the way certain organizations are starting to think, where they know that this is going to come down as a requirement, so they're starting to think ahead. And so it's about starting to shift your mindset about how you think about how you're doing things and maybe shaking out of the business as usual type of mindset. So as we start to wrap up, let's take a look at where we've been. So here's where we started. We had our end-to-end broadcast workflow with our sources, transport, ingest. Then we mapped in our AWS services, and we started to see how you can take more of a one-to-one and start to compare, okay, I know what exists on-premises, how can I map that to AWS? And one more thing I'll mention to close on is that now that you've seen a better understanding of how this can be done, I'll close with a few more benefits to consider. So AWS has the broadest set of services, partner solutions to address a wide range of industry use cases. The solutions that are powered by a comprehensive suite of AI, media, and infrastructure services. In our industry-specific offerings, like leverage the depth of AWS AI services, so this can be like Amazon Recognition, which is a computer vision, so it can automatically tag things in video. You have our Amazon Translate, our Amazon Transcribe, which can automatically transcribe and translate videos. And we have our robust infrastructure from our compute, storage, containers, and frameworks that forms the foundational layer. So together with these industry-tailored solutions, they enable customers to rapidly deploy applications to meet their unique needs. And whether it's powering personalized banking experiences that we've seen, automotive manufacturing experiences, the breadth of our services can help address a wide range of use cases across sectors, and obviously, as we've seen, specifically within media. So if you're like me and you didn't, at one point I didn't know this, and so if you're interested, you don't really know how to get started, I got a few tips on how you could dip your toe in the water. So if you wanna just understand it better, we have our AWS Skill Builder website that says free digital training. You can just search for it, or you can use that QR code where you can just start to get the fundamentals of the cloud. And then a few other ones I recommend. So we have AWS workshops. So the workshops can cover things like generative AI. It can cover foundational services. It can cover media services. And even solutions architects like myself use these to get up to speed on new workflows and new capabilities. We also have blogs and videos that solutions architects like myself have produced over time, so you can find those online, use the QR code. And finally, we have our AWS Broadcast Solutions page, which has a subset of our case studies, our partner solutions, and existing capabilities there. So with that, that's my talk for today. So I hope this was informative and maybe you took something away to rethink your how you're doing things and if there's a way to integrate cloud into your workflow. And if you have any questions, I'll be around. So thanks for joining the talk today.